Ladies, gentlemen, and non-binary friends, my name is Kat, and this is Moni.
Hey, guys.
And we are your co-hosts. On behalf of the Fake Ass Book Club, a.k.a.
The Bad Podcast,
we welcome you aboard the mothership. We are sending you on a non-stop trip directly into the shenanigans of this podcast.
If this is your first time, please listen carefully until the end of this announcement.
However, if you are a frequent flyer, you may skip directly to the show and enjoy. The Fake Ass Book Club has a running time of about 1 hour. We will be ascending to an altitude of whatever cocktails we have available. Also, we most likely will be talking at the speed of roughly 100 miles per minute. When the fab neon sign illuminates, make sure your headphones are plugged in, your devices are charged, and your pearls are properly clutched.
Yes, Lord.
As this podcast contains explicit language, strong opinions, and adult content, individuals under 18 are not advised to listen and do so at their own risk.
And we would also like to remind you that this is a fake-ass book club.
If you're an avid reader, or if you never plan to pick up a book in your life, this is still the podcast for you. The only must is that you show up. To any and all haters aboard, you already know where the emergency exit is.
Bye, Felicia.
If this podcast is not for you, we understand. However, tampering with, damaging, or trying to destroy our positive vibes are strictly prohibited by FAB bylaws, which clearly state good vibes only. Before takeoff, you will find information about us and this podcast at our website at thefabpodcast.com. We strongly suggest that you follow us across social media and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. If you have any questions or want to reach out, please don't hesitate to email us at thefabpodcast@gmail.com. We know you have a choice in podcasts, and on behalf of the Fab Podcast, we would like to thank you for choosing us. So with that, buckle up, sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
Hey, y'all, this is Moni.
And this is Kat.
Hey, Kat.
And this is the Fake-Ass Book Club.
Wait, can we both say it or no?
Hey, everybody. This is your girl, Moni.
And this is Kat. Welcome back.
Welcome back to the Fake Ass Book Club, guys. Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
What?
I'm so excited to be here. Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
That I would be this excited?
I could.
I know. We can't start off the episode without the excitement. So we're so glad you guys came back to join us. We have a really fantastic book to talk about today, guys. You are going to be clutching your pearls. So I cannot even wait to dig into this. Do you want to give the title and the author
yes.
a shout out?
The title is Beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And the author is Sylvia Hubbard.
Ooh, okay. Yes. All right, let's go Sylvia Hubbard with Beautiful.
Yes.
All right.
So do you want to talk a little bit about her?
Well, first, let's do our statement. Let's follow
okay.
it. We're
going
to do,
okay.
we're going to try to, like last episode, I feel like we veered
we did.
Off of standard deviation. So let's keep it cute.
It was derailed.
Yeah,
we'll stay together.
So
cohesive.
Yeah, so movie trailer statement for this.
Dun, dun, dun. There was absolutely nothing Madison wanted more than to be savored, enjoyed, and loved for every inch of her true self, inside and out, hungry with an insatiable desire for passion and the ability to give herself fully to another. She discovers a handsome stranger who can fulfill her every wish, and she is willing to do anything possible to gain his adoration. But there is a catch. Dun,
ooh,
dun, dun.
Damn, son.
And this is actually her 40th novel.
This is crazy. So this is
I haven't
segue.
Written a book.
Listen, I haven't. Listen, me either.
And I can barely get through a to-do list.
Dude, I can barely listen to one, let's be for real, or read one, let alone write
right?
several. So that is pretty fantastic.
Yes.
So, I mean, hopefully that drew you guys in. I definitely want to start this episode. So before we jump into the book, I mean, that's a lot of drama. I feel like we've got mm-hmm. a lot to talk about, a lot to unpack here. But before we do that, let's dedicate this episode. Mm-hmm. We always like to start each episode just kind of with a dedication. And I'm going to dedicate this always, like, just to our listeners, anybody taking your time to listen to this madness, we appreciate you because you could be doing other stuff. But
congratulations.
Shout out to you. Absolutely. And also to anybody dealing with mental health issues, shout out to you. That shit's hard. Friend.
Extremely. I wanted to dedicate this episode to the long line of bad bitches that got me here.
Whoa, come through, bad bitches.
Most recently, my mom, in the lineage. Nice. But it's been clear to see, like, how my steps have been guided in a very real way by the women who took a lot of time out to do that for me and be examples. And,
to, like, our ancestors.
And it goes to show, too, like, how it crafts what you expect from your life. Because, like, I notice I have pretty high expectations, which can be disappointing because they're very often not met.
Right, well, because life sucks and it's ghetto here. But also, I mean, you have to have something to aspire to.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, like, setting that standard that I'm always trying to hit. Like, I'm still trying to be like my mom.
Like
I'm
a girl one day. Oh, that's very sweet. I'm sure she will die, okay, if she ever knew that this was
happening. She's so together. She's such an adult.
My God. Shout out to the mom. We always do that, but shout out to you. This shit's hard, too.
Yes. So that's my dedication. Dedication over.
Wait, no, it's not.
More dedication. Keep it going.
Wait, I forgot. I wanted to dedicate also this episode to Chef Nikki. Her name is Nicole George. Shout out to you, Savor Creations, Chef Nikki on Instagram. So me and my husband, we just had our 15-year wedding anniversary. And I surprised him with, like, a whole weekend celebration. We got an Airbnb, private chef, bow. You know what I'm saying? I was romancing my man. So, and she helped make it to where I told him he was fine. I did more than compliment him, okay?
She put him on the Instagram.
Listen, he made it to the social media. He hates being on there, but I made his face on there.
And she married him. That was enough.
Listen, and I take care of his big head kids. I do a lot. So,
she had his big head.
You're welcome. But 15 years later, I still love him. I still like him as a person. Still respect him. He's the best. And Chef Nikki made my night so special. You guys, if you're in the Indianapolis area, please check her out. She was so good. I can't wait to book her again. I'll put her stuff in the description. So shout out to Nikki George. You were the real MVP this weekend. Okay, so now
it's been 15 years since your wedding. That was the funnest time.
Oh, that shit is
like
wild.
I didn't even get married, and I had a great time.
It was. You know what? It was the cat's pajamas.
It was a vibe. It was a whole vibe. Yes, but yeah, we're back for what we're here for.
We are here for Sylvia Hubbard's book, Beautiful, and I want to give sort of a intro because I have a surprise. Like, she's actually here. She's going to talk with us. We have the author here. Oh my god. But before I have her kind of introduce herself, I wanted to kind of give her a proper introduction. So I have Sylvia Hubbard, Detroit author, blogger, podcaster, speaker, encourager, and Michigan's literary diva, a.k.a. the Cliffhanger Queen, by fans of her work. Sylvia has independently published 4 paperback books and over 10 ebooks. Her foundation genre, always been romance, but she has ventured into suspense, erotic comma mystery, paranormal, and IR, always urban and contemporarily styled. She is also the founder of Motown's Writer Network and CEO of Hub Books Literary Services. Damn, I mean, and listen, this whole list, I'm saying, like, she's got all these accolades, and I need you to understand, like, she's been in the game for a really long time. So it goes on and on and on, but all of it is fabulousness. And without further ado, we want to introduce Miss Sylvia. How are you?
Y'all gonna make me cry.
Do it. Cry. Do it.
Cry.
I mean, we're just so excited.
I like that statement you made about your husband, because you rarely hear people say that. They'll say, yeah, I love my husband, but they never follow it up with that. That like was like really pinnacle.
Thank you.
In that, because you don't even see that in romance books. Like, you see the love and the passion and the lust and all of that. But you never see that underscore of like.
Man,
do you like this person?
Sylvia, I'm telling you, you're hitting a point here, because that's the hardest point, in my opinion, to maintain.
Yes, it's the most important point.
Yes, it is. Like, do I like and respect you as a human being?
Right.
Still? Yes. You know, even though we're building this life. So thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for being here. It means a lot to me personally. Because I just have to say really quickly, I know Sylvia, and I use it loosely now because, I mean, we don't personally know each other as adults or anything now.
Right.
But I may have mentioned this on the show before. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. So is Sylvia. And she actually lived across the street from me for years and years. And used to, like, watch us, which was crazy, But I actually dedicated my very first podcast episode to you, though, because...
Oh, stop. You're going to make me cry.
I'm telling you, this
girl,
is the goal. Go ahead and do it. Take your glasses
off.
We
cry all the time.
You and Kat, I'll hand y'all some tissues.
Listen.
And I'm not just saying that. This is not me gassing you up. This is legit.
We'll put like, some joy inside your tears.
Yes, we will, because it's just really important in your formative years that you come across people who inspire you. And you were just always somebody, I mean, in the middle of the hood, you know, I was got to be exposed to somebody who was like a college, you know, like she went to broadcasting school, and I remember this because she would take me with her sometimes and like have me in some of her projects.
Because nobody wanted to.
Because nobody wanted to be right. Exactly. I was terrible. No, no. But it was, you know. So I would be with her, and I saw her like pursuing her education and her passions, and she was always reading a book. And I remember one of the first books that I read was a romance novel, which was kind of like okay, but you know, it just kind of sparked my interest in literature and it all in the arts in general, and that always like really stayed with me. You know what I mean? And so I just yeah, aww, shout out to you for that. So yeah, I just had to put that out there really quickly before we kind of get into it. But for those who aren't familiar with you, Sylvia, do you mind telling us just a little bit about yourself before we get into the book?
Oh, good Lord.
I mean, if I didn't cover, did I miss anything?
I usually say I'm bad on paper, so I can be good in life.
Amen. And... Amen. I like it. I like that.
I am now a happily married woman. I have three kids that I know of.
And... Wow. Wow. The other ones can stay back because I'm not claiming y'all.
And yeah, I'm still in Detroit. So okay. I'm just being happy being here. So
awesome.
Taking like one it. Day at a time.
Okay. Awesome. So we can kind of segue into, you know, the book that we're reviewing today, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So what initially inspired you to write this book? Like, where did the inspiration for this book come from?
Well, actually it was seeing my daughters starting to graduate and get out in the world. And I wanted to impart on them one important piece of advice that I wanted to make sure they could carry around with them. So, you know, as a mom, you're like, oh my God, they're going to meet so many different people. They're going to be in the world and the world is going to be around them. So what could I possibly say to them that could, you know, protect them from sure. everything, you know? And I realized that our best armor is our beautiful. Once we find that piece that's inside of us, that you have to get to the Pandora box just to find that little pearl down in the corner, then you're like, okay, now the world can't harm me because I know my beautiful. I know what it takes to be this beautiful, and I know what it takes to keep my beautiful. So I was like, I wanted to tell them that. Which then Madison came to light because I saw my daughters as intelligent and smart, and to see something taken away like that would destroy me.
Right.
And I didn't want them to be destroyed. So Madison was birthed from actually my speech I made with my daughter that, you know, I just didn't want it to happen. And then I wanted to pass that knowledge on to other women. You know, find your beautiful before you find anything else and protect it because it'll come back and protect you.
That's beautiful. I like that. And so when you talk about finding your beautiful, specifically, what do you mean? Like when you say that, like, what does that mean to you specifically?
To me, it means everything that is your thoughts, your needs, your wants. That little spark inside of you when you were 8 years old and you just knew that no one in the world could ever, ever, ever tell you anything.
Right. Right.
That's confidence. Where, yeah, that confidence. And inside of that, it's like a pearl that is inside of your soul that no matter what anybody throws at you, when you have this pearl, it just makes everything go away, everything bad, because you know you have that and nobody can take it away. But I think a lot of times as women, we lose our pearl. We lose the shine and we forget about it, or we put it somewhere and forgot where we put it.
Right. Or we know where it's at, but we don't necessarily understand the value of it.
Right. Because and that was the next thing I was going to say. Yeah. We don't understand that value. But I think the women, and you can always tell when people find their, when especially women, when we find our pearl, because we have this glow about us. We have this way we walk, where we talk. It's not even just something, it's a facade. It's just a natural way of knowing my pearl can shine brighter than the sun. It is more powerful than this universe. And heck, the seraphims in heaven are singing my praises too.
Well, damn.
I like that. It reminds me too of that saying, like you always hear old Black women say, like you're giving away diamonds. And it's like that same thing of like when you know what you have, it's like, I'm not just giving this away to anybody. Like that's just giving away diamonds. Like I'm not doing that.
Yeah, for true.
And that's beautiful the way you say that too, because I have a daughter and it is like hard to watch them like start getting that self-consciousness that takes that away. Like when the world is telling them like, you're not cute enough, you need lip fillers, you need filters, you need like to be beautiful.
Right.
Where it's like, no, I think I already got it.
Absolutely.
Like you said, like that 8-year-old, you was like, nah, I'm pretty much, I'm pretty
you're sweet
sure.
As hell.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You can I'm tell amazing. Me nothing. Yeah. My like, little Vaseline lip gloss on and I'm just cute.
Yes.
Like, big teeth and all. Okay?
Yeah, it doesn't even matter. You just know. And that's like getting back to that.
Yeah, man.
That, and like I said, when we have daughters, it becomes a very like real reflection.
She gets personal.
That. Yeah,
she
where it's like, personal. Wow, you
really
are very
personal.
Much a direct mirror.
That's beautiful. I like that. I mean, I like the energy came from that. So like, let's just dive into the book though, y'all. We gotta get past all like wipe. Get your tissues, all right? Because now the shit gets real. Because let me start off by saying this. So how would you classify this book's genre?
It would be. Actually, they classify it as a medical drama, intrigue, romance, suspense.
Got it. Nice. That and you know what? I feel like you're covering a lot of your books are. I feel like you know we talked about how that kind of falls in that genre. These are kind of the top genres of books that people read. It seems like, which
romance, suspense.
Yeah, romance, suspense. Which I have to say, this is not necessarily something that I get into. Like as far as like romance books anymore. What about you, Kat? Like, do you typically?
I'm dead inside. I never read romance.
Inside.
I never read romance novels. No.
I'm talking about what are those little balls of dust in the desert? Like that's
tumbleweed.
Yeah, those.
Yes.
That's what's inside my heart.
Yes.
It's almost dead.
I have an ice box where my heart used to be.
Man.
So yeah, I never.
Well, I hope this sparked you just a little.
Oh man, I'm telling you, it was very. I mean, what I will say is that it was nice to kind of pivot. And read something different that we don't normally read.
Yeah, there was
read.
No racism. That was
and
great.
100%, because
we were coming
to torture ourselves.
We
okay?
came off some hard racism.
Yeah, man. It just it keeps coming up. So, yeah, we didn't. So, the listeners, I want you guys to know this is one book where we did not delve into racism, finally.
But you know what? It's, well...
Not 100. Well,
I was going to say, because there was no white characters, but there's one.
But that's not racism.
But that's not white people. That's white person.
Okay, well, so anyway, we're not the white person.
But if there's white people, there's going to be racism.
We just didn't have enough to go into full-blown racism.
Right. So just know that. It's a racism-free zone.
Oh, my gosh. This is too much. Okay, so what do you think? So, like, let's do the breakdown of the actual book. Friend, do you have a...
Okay.
Like, or Sylvia, I feel like you should, duh. It's your book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about just the plot or whatever? You know what I mean? Just give us a synopsis of just what the book is about.
So the plot is basically about Madison, who has this huge research. She does research. She DNA splices for plants to make a better world for humanity. And she has this huge grant that she herself is dependent upon. Her college is dependent upon. Her whole world is dependent upon her research being accepted for this huge grant. At the same time, she's going through her own personal struggle of just being beautiful and finding her beautiful and just trying to find the love that she's missing in her life. You know, her father's not giving it. She doesn't have anybody else in the world. And she's just struggling with that internal struggle of where, when am I going to feel that beautiful in my life? You know? Mm-hmm. So, she takes a chance and
yeah, she does.
she takes a chance and, ends up losing her research. Her research is got stolen, and her world falls apart.
By her best friend.
By her best effing friend.
She has to build it back one page at a time. Just
well, isn't that
one
life?
Step at a time.
Isn't that
and
life?
And it is life. Mm-hmm. It is life, you know? Sometimes the closest people are the ones that's hugging you with a sword in your back.
Which is so sad. And I like that synopsis because it was kind of like, to me, when I was reading the book, some of the themes that seemed relevant to me was a lot of the self-love and like self-discovery portion that you're talking about mm-hmm. as far as finding your beautiful. And then also to just, once you find that truth, living in that truth and that allowing kind of like that beauty to shine through, whatever, however that is right. for you. And honestly, overcoming toxic relationships. I mean, the fact that you touched right. on like just like her family life was so fucking tragic that I was like, wow, her dad was like a preacher. And he was awful.
Assistant preacher.
Give us the facts right. He wasn't even the head preacher of the church.
They had to always come back in and say that. It was like, well, he's the assistant preacher.
The assistant one. And he was particularly toxic. Like, he was fucking terrible. And you could tell that she didn't have a close relationship with her dad. And what mm-hmm. was striking me the whole time, like, so she was living with her dad because... again, she was doing this huge research project. It was taking up so much of her time. So it wasn't like she could really work and be out. Like, she was just, everything was dedicated to right. her education and her trying to, advance her future. And, again, it wasn't just her. It was the school on the line. So she's spending all of her time doing this. And, so she's living at home with her parents. Because was she 30 or, like, almost? She was, like, in her
almost 30.
Yeah, she was almost 30.
She was almost 30. So, like, I'm thinking about being, like, an almost 30-year-old. You're already feeling like, damn, like, I should already... have my life together.
And, that's why that grant was like so important, because she was like, if I could just, and we do have these moments in our life, if I could just get this one thing, mm-hmm. I can get on with my life. My life can be better. And right. we put a whole bunch of emotional, spiritual, physical of ourselves into it. And that's what I kind of needed her. I needed to break her in order for her to build a better house.
Isn't that something? And I think that, like, showing her in that abusive relationship and that cycle of dependency you have on people who are toxic sometimes, it kind of made me think about autonomy, which is something that I feel like comes up a lot in a lot of the books that we read, is just, like, how important that is, especially as women, because whether it's mm-hmm. your father, whether it's the man you're dating, or whomever, it doesn't necessarily have to be a male-female relationship, but... there's a certain power that people have over you when they are financially responsible for your well-being right. and how that transforms your interactions with them and how you sometimes will stick around because you know that your livelihood is affected directly by your interactions right. with this person. And it's really fucked up and it's really, really psychologically damaging when it is a parent, when it is a loved one, right. when it is somebody.
Because you have to literally, how we code switch like at work, but we have to code switch with our family. And that's the
crazy.
One place you shouldn't have to code switch.
But
you should
do.
Be able to be yourself mm-hmm. and everybody love you. But that's what she was doing. She was code switching. Like, she knew her dad was not a nice person, from her mom's interaction, from what she was slowly finding out. But it was like, okay, I still got to respect you as a parent. And that shouldn't be the case.
No.
And like when we're talking about like dependence, but it was more of a feeling of dependency because she
For
found
sure,
out
she
like
lived.
When she cut that relationship off, she was still able to survive.
Yeah.
And even when she didn't originally get the grant that she was pinning everything on, she still survived and found a way to succeed. So even yeah. a lot of times when we have these feelings of dependencies, we end up finding out like, actually, I didn't even need that.
Mm.
Like right. like I wanted that, but I actually still had something else in like reserve that I was able to draw upon right. because even though she did have her research stolen by her quote unquote
Skank
best
ass.
Friend, like she
we gotta go back. We gotta go back to her.
She
because
still had enough value in reserve that she was able to still make a success off of the other research she was doing. So
right.
a lot of times in our lives when we feel like defeated or someone took something from us, it's like, wait, they didn't take everything.
Right.
They thought they took what they saw that they could take, but I have so much more.
Oh, I like
right.
that.
And that is actually the perfect point of the book. That is like, I think that's happened to me so many times in my life that I just had to bring that out because I didn't see that a lot in a lot of stories. And I think a lot of times when we're reading fiction, I think it should reflect real life because a lot of people need to connect with that and say, okay, things are going bad, but maybe this needs to be moved out the way in order for me to get a bigger blessing. And yeah. and that's what it turned out to be. Like, once she pushed that, you know, she lost the research. That was a horrible thing, but
I know, can we talk about it? Can we talk about how that happened? Can we, because I feel like,
go ahead.
let's start with Nikki, right? So like, even at the beginning where they're sort of, or where you're sort of kind of given the dynamic of their relationship, it seems very one-sided. It seems like a lot of her relationships are that way. And it made me think about just the lack of self-love, the lack of confidence, the lack of just her seeing who she is. And so like, you're willing to take a subpar friendship. Like, her friend never was about her. She was always talking about herself. Everything was about Nikki. So to me,
everything was about Nikki.
It wasn't a friendship. Like, to me, I'm reading that like, this bitch ain't her friend. Like, honestly, from the beginning, I'm like, well, I'm an emotional vampire. Thank you, friend. That's exactly what it is, because I know what friendships look like. You know what I mean? So to me,
I'm like, she's a vampire. She was an emotional vampire, just sucking the life out of her.
Yes. And never wanted to see her, like, do better than her. Like, sometimes I think she kept her around just to be like, oh, look at how wonderful I am and mm-hmm. how little you are.
Exactly.
And, like, some people keep that around where it's kind of like, actually, like, I want my friend group to inspire me.
Thank you. I want to look at them and think, I want to be like, you know, I'm inspired. Right.
Yeah. Let me do better.
Exactly. Right. Keep me from being a slouch.
Right.
So,
it's like, whoa.
Yeah, so that was an interesting dynamic. And then you have her dad, like, you know, getting into physical altercations with her. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is nuts. Like, he's crazy.
I loved the scene where she finally breaks it off with him. Because, like you said, with storytelling, it's important to see these issues resolved, not just continue. So when we finally see the moment where she's like, no, enough, I'm fighting back, I'm calling the police, you're done.
Fuck out of here.
And it's because it's never going to change. Because and that's something that's really hard, too, because, I'm as a person, I've never had to do that. My dad was great. Right. So I never had to do that. But when you're actually in a toxic, but I've been in toxic relationships that were really hard to cut off. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like it's a part of you, and where you're, and for our character, her father literally is half of her. And to cut that off is mentally, it's like cutting off a hand or something, like where it feels like, how am I going to survive after this? But seeing our character survive after she cut that off was extremely powerful.
Yeah, that was that was definitely a good thing. But yes,
like I said, I wanted to give women, especially women who feel they're in situations like Madison, you know, where they have family coming at them and saying, you know, people will say, you know, blood is thicker than water. Sometimes that water is so much better.
The water is so much more nourishing. Okay. Less creepy.
So much more nourishing. Like,
yeah, there's no one here. You have to let in your life like that.
Yeah. It shouldn't. Family should be. And then sometimes you just have to recognize that maybe family is not about blood. Family is about people who care about you and want to see you do better. That is the family. And if it's not the people you were born with or the people who gave birth to you, then you need to walk away and find a better family.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, it's always easier said than done, but that's very true.
But I think that's the point, too, though, because I don't think for one second she ever thought that she could, you know. And then but then when you see that, when you see her actually be able to push through and still, you know, I think we never give ourselves enough credit when it comes to stuff like that. You know, whatever we could perceive to be difficult, it's always like, well, I don't, you know, you doubt yourself. And then, you know, especially when it comes to family, I just feel like that always makes it particularly difficult. Is
very
because
difficult.
it adds this little piece where it's like, I mean, if it was anybody else, it'd be easier. It feels easier.
Right. You know, just like you said, it's cutting off a hand.
It's cutting off a part of you because
it's not even cutting. Sometimes it's gnawing.
Right.
You
gross.
You have to gnaw your hand off.
It is hard to make a clean break.
Yes,
yeah, a lot of times it is just that sort of sawing away and cutting away and wanting to excise that. Yeah. Yeah,
this is so random, but I just saw this today. So sidebar, I'm totally taking a tangent here. Have you guys ever heard of The Boys? I think it's on Netflix.
Girl, yes. And it's on Prime.
Prime. Okay, I got it wrong. It is, oh my God, it's so Quentin Tarantino. Yes. It's so gory and stuff.
Girl,
and there was a scene.
It's superheroes. You know I've been to watch
Oh
that.
My God. He was, the character had to like cut off this burnt man's hand yep. to use it. And that, it just, that's the visual right now for me where he had, he broke a bottle and he was like cutting his arm
first
off. And it was
the
so
very
disgusting.
First scene of the show was a character's hand getting
nasty.
Detached from her body.
Listen, I had a whole laugh attack when everybody's heads was blowing up.
When she blew up, when he ran fast into her,
yeah, and dude's just holding over girl's hands. And the hands are still there, but her body's
boom.
Gone.
So this is what I'm picturing as we're talking about gnawing our
yes.
hands off when we're talking about toxic relationships right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that was a gruesome show, but it was really good.
Like, yeah, so that was what popped up for me. And I'm super inappropriate because I'm like laughing the whole time. Not because it's
no,
funny.
No, it's a coping mechanism. I say this all the time.
But
saying
I was hysterically
something...
laughing. My husband was like recording me laughing because I was laughing just that hard. He was like, what are you laughing at? This is terrible. I'm like, I don't have to do with this. This is terrible.
Saying something's not funny is the same thing as saying it's not tragic.
I want to cry.
Like tragedy and comedy are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah,
so a lot of times we do have that response for stuff like just
coping.
I feel like that's what Joker was about.
Coping. I had to cope with that somehow.
Yeah, it was really, a lot of this was coping though.
Yeah, so
it
sorry.
Was really, it was really, really difficult. But I yes,
well
and
track.
That. I totally
Thank
get
you,
that.
Friend.
I'm actually, just to be totally random, was using the example of Rick and Morty because in the season finale,
okay.
they did a metaphor about Rick mm-hmm. getting out of a bad relationship because he literally had to sever his hand. With a, to yeah. get out of a bad relationship and drop
oh
it
God.
Into a portal in that person's thigh to make them get, like, and I remember watching it and being like, okay, I know this is a cartoon, but having gotten out of toxic relationships, it does feel like cutting off a part of me. Like, it feels
right?
that difficult.
Right.
Like, when people are like, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just leave? It's like, well,
it's hard. How do you even put it in words?
Right. Yeah. It, because it's like, how could you cut off your hand? But at a certain point, you do have to. In
you realize
the episode, he cuts it off and regrows it. But
yeah. That's the
yeah.
part you don't know is that it'll come back. That,
yes.
Oh, yeah,
like you, but seeing those narratives play out is very powerful. So like when you see it over and over and over again, you can finally be like, you know what? I think I can cut this part off and regrow this and redo it. And that is truly beautiful.
Yeah, that is the beauty. That
right.
definitely is the
and
beauty.
And sometimes it'll grow back even better. So,
yeah.
so
I think
much better.
We all have to, but it's so scary. I think that's why people stay in those relationships or continue because I used to work at 911 and we used to
Ooh.
Often get calls.
Whoa, pause. Mm. So just for the listeners, you're in Detroit, correct?
Right.
So I need y'all to paint a picture. I know you
so
were getting
how
the
is,
worst
we're in
calls
Indiana,
of
like,
life.
Let's just talk about, is it cold in the
it's
D?
It's so cold in the
it's
D.
It's not even, it's not cold here. No.
What you
See, she's trying to be funny.
Yeah,
she's trying
mean,
to be
I'm
funny. Mean. She's trying to be funny because there is a song. We'll have to send a link to you after
I'm
this,
asking.
Sylvia, because she's.
It's a different.
What's her name? Baby T or some shit, man. She,
it's different though. Like Detroit's different.
So when we say it's cold in the D, it's a callback to this like thing on social media. We'll have to pipe it in
sure.
so people can hear
sure.
the song or whatever.
Sure.
But it's these super ratchet little people singing this little song
but
about
it's
Detroit.
Real.
Super ratchet.
Super ratchet little baby.
But
you didn't
so
hear the remix. Did you see the did you hear the remix?
I haven't. It's okay, see.
No.
Now
she
that,
came out with a remix about 3 years ago.
Baby T,
she
is that her name?
Girl,
oh, I feel like our sound engineer is pulling it up and it's gonna drop it on us.
T Baby. God damn, there she goes. Look, he pulls it up. No, not T Baby and them. It should say T Baby and them.
I didn't bring it up to be shady. It's
no,
to
I know,
show
but it was,
that Detroit is hard. Like the whenever
certain,
you read like the pimp stories out of Detroit, like it's yeah, something.
It's a specific kind of tragedy.
It is specific. And not for nothing though, like my first entry into Detroit wasn't even Moni. It was the like the hair and nail books,
oh,
like from the beauty
hard.
Supply. Like
yeah.
that was my first entry into Detroit.
It's
and that was my that's what I'm saying. Like Detroit goes hard.
house music. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
House music, too. Yeah. Oh, house and their house music, is
it's a cult. It's well, to say that Detroit is a culture in and to itself, and it goes hard, and so the abuse goes hard as well.
The abuse goes hard.
It's a world of its own, because, I mean, we invented crack houses. We invented streetlights. So, you know, pick your poison.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the 911 calls, needless to say, were lit and not in a good way.
Yeah, they were toxic, because you would hear these women saying, okay, can you just come and tell him to stop hitting me?
Oh, wow.
I don't want to arrest him. I just want him to stop hitting me so I can go to sleep.
Like, I just want peace. You're like, ma'am, girl, just get the fuck out of there. What are you get right? Yes. It's easy to say it when you're not there, right?
Right. And I mean, and when you tell them, well, you know, if we come, we're going to arrest him, because, you know, and they'll be like, well, that's okay. Don't send anybody.
So now I have to sit here knowing you're getting your ass beat. And so that's on my consciousness
now. I'm still sending it. I would still send a car. But it was just the fact, you could hear it in her voice. She was tired.
She
was exhausted. She just wanted some peace. Just, if you could just let me sleep for tonight, everything will be okay tomorrow. And you start thinking about, like, okay, these people are living real life. Like, you know, you hear other stories, but when you hear the tiredness, you really haven't heard misery until you hear a woman so tired of being tired of tiredness.
Damn.
It'll really grip you, because you're like, you just want to drive over to the house after work and be like, come on, get your stuff, get your bags,
we gotta go.
Whatever. He ain't going to come after me.
Right,
come on, let's go.
Exactly.
But then, you know, if you do that, she's going to come back.
Because you have to be ready.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it is a place in your life where, yes, you have to be ready to be so tired. You won't go back.
Right.
Not that you can't go back, but you will not go back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's where that self-love comes in. You have to love yourself more than anybody else in the world in order to just say, I'm not putting up with that. I'm not going to have that in my life at all.
Right. So do you think so? All right. So back to our main character, Madison. So she was in these abusive relationships and, you know, she found herself in a situation where she meets this mysterious guy or whatever.
Right.
And
I do have a story for that.
Please tell me about this story.
Because that was actually an almost real event when she met. I was standing at the bus stop.
Oh my God, please.
I was gonna, one of my questions
hold on,
were these characters.
I was standing. And when you think about the book and I describe it in the book, you're gonna be like, oh my God, that's the same place.
Okay,
so
go.
I was right there on Coyle in Chicago.
No.
Waiting for the bus.
Oh, Lord.
And you know those houses across the street.
Mm-hmm. Very illustrious group of houses there.
And this really nice old classic car pulled up, and he had been staring at me for a long time. I didn't think anything about it. And, you know, it's like those abandoned houses right behind the bus stop, right?
Right. So it's like, this nigga's either a pimp or a drug dealer or something, because this looks unsavory.
He pulled behind those, and then he was going, psst. It kept going, psst. And I'm standing at the bus stop like, okay, come on, hurry up, boss.
Please, hurry up.
And I didn't look at him or anything, but, you know, you got your Detroit peripheral vision
going
on.
Yes, I see you, though.
I see you, but I don't see you.
Yeah.
And when the bus was coming, I looked back, and, girl, he was just gorgeous.
He was beautiful? Please,
wait.
Okay, so you're at the bus stop.
I do like
creepy
car
man,
guy. Like, talk slow.
And now, yes, right, go back. So he was fine, is what you're saying.
Oh, my God. He just was, oh, girl.
What? Because they're never fine. The creepers are never fine.
The coochie sliders are never fine.
That's what was so weird about it. And he just kept saying, come on over here. I just want to talk to you. And the bus came and I jumped on the bus. And that was the last time I saw it. But I was like, when I was writing this story, I was like, what if I had walked up to that car?
Right.
Come on, Miss Connection.
Oh, shit.
One of my questions were any of the characters based on real people?
Well, that was one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because I was wondering.
Oh my God.
You know, it probably worked out for the best.
For sure. Yes. For sure. But so in the story, tell us kind of what happened.
Because I feel
though,
like
right?
the fantasy is always better than the reality. Yeah. So,
probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
But like,
so you probably didn't take
book,
care of his
she
kids
does,
or nothing.
Yeah. She does walk over to the car and, you know, it's raining. So he invites her inside of the car. You know, she's affected.
Yes, she affected. I like that. Yes, she was. Nose was wide open.
That is a wild feeling, though. Like that is a very intoxicating feeling. And like when you described like this super fine dude, like those experiences are very powerful.
Yeah, they are. And especially if you feel like for the first time that you have some kind of power over somebody.
Allure.
I think in a lot of her life,
right.
there was no power. She had no, you know, you're just going with the flow. You're a leaf in the wind, but you're having this interaction and you're feeling particularly powerful because you're like, oh,
right.
okay. He,
and that's
he
how
sees
she felt.
Me.
She was, yeah. She
yeah.
liked that. She liked the way he looked at her. Like she liked the way he made her feel. Like, mm-hmm. I got this guy. Like, he just looked at me and he wanted me. And it's like, damn, like,
I got it,
like
still got it.
Got it.
But what's crazy to me, though, when I hear that, I'm always like, God damn, that can't be my daughter, you know? Like, because I need you to kind of like going back to what you're saying, like just giving them that self-esteem because,
right.
I mean, there's plenty of ain't shit fine men out here who will have, you know, will look at you away and try and know that they can manipulate you. But I think that when you do have that strong sense of who you are, it's harder to do. So I felt bad for her because I was like, oh, God, here we go.
Right.
Here we go, Madison. This is about to be a whole trip right now. Like, I know, you know, this is about to be an experience for you. But I understand, I can kind of understand how you can be in a situation like that where, you know, if the first time somebody's telling you you're beautiful and you've never heard that
right.
before.
And that's what was the scary
you've
part.
Never
with
heard
me.
That?
Right. And I was so scared my daughters would go out in the world and some guy would just walk up to them and be like, oh, you beautiful. And then next thing I know, they in New York selling themselves.
It's like,
you know,
oh, my clothes fell off. Like, yeah, it'll be like that. Because that's a power. It's electric. Like,
what about the grooming we talked about, too? That's
grooming.
How the grooming happens,
right.
too. You
that's
know?
How grooming happens. They mm-hmm. make them feel so good. They make them feel, oh, you're just this, and you can get any man. And then they drop you off. And this does happen.
Girl, let's talk about this.
Do we have to talk about human trafficking now?
No, not human trafficking, but just the whole scenario. So, like, so she ends up, because his name is Jamar, correct?
Right.
Or Mr. Golan.
Right.
Okay.
Spoilers.
Okay. And so he was.
Oh, can I say this right now, too? So make myself feel good.
Bam, 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 bam.
I finished the book. Moni didn't.
Okay, I did.
Okay.
I got halfway done.
But to be fair, she has two small children. My kids are like grown.
And it was an anniversary weekend, and I was
yes.
trying to
yes.
drum up my own beautiful.
It would have been rude to your husband to be like, have your nose in a book.
No, I did a little bit.
Okay.
I did yesterday. I read maybe like 30 pages, you know, when
I'm
I got
sure,
up.
I'm sure, but you couldn't have gone.
I tried.
Listen, man. I'm single. I had all weekend to myself. I read the whole thing, so it was fine.
So you know what happens with
I do. I told her it's fine
she
to spoil. Like mm-hmm. I went ahead and just spoiled. Like I love spoiling.
She does. It's her favorite. She did it at the beginning of
well,
one of our
episodes. Let me put it this way. Let me put it this way. Let me put it this way. I don't love spoiling. I love information. I love information, and I love sharing information, and that involves spoiling.
It does.
That's part of the subset of spoiling.
Well, so. What was crazy is so, like, she's interacting with this guy, Jamar. She likes him, and she starts looking forward to seeing him every day because she's just getting her life.
Oh, and also, listeners, if you like a nice nylon kink, it's there for you.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yes. It's there for you if you like. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. But what I found interesting or crazy was, like, once she got the balls or uterus,
mm-hmm.
ovaries. To leave, you know, her family situation, you know, he helped her put her up in this, like, you know, temporary living situation. And, you know, I mean, she's just able to kind of feel free for the first time, like to the point where, oh, I can take a shower without it being a big fucking deal.
I wrote down that was a type of baptism.
I like that.
Like being able to take a, yes, because I think about that all the time when I'm taking a nice long shower and how good that feels and about how very few people get that experience.
Man, it is a luxury.
It is. It is. Like, it's a simple luxury, but it is a luxury. Mm-hmm. And having that time to think because she was under so much pressure all the time from her father, who was making her get a job, because he wasn't just physically abusing her. He was financially abusing her. Mm-hmm. He was emotionally mm-hmm. abusing her. He was verbally abusing her.
Physically.
Like, yeah, just all the different types of abuse she was suffering from her father.
And the stepmom.
And the stepmother.
Trash. Pause, because when you were describing her physically, I cackled.
Oh, boy.
She looked like a... I died. I was like, hold on. No, she didn't say.
She looked like a black Martin short
with a dry-ass skin. And I don't know. Listen, if you listen to this podcast, mm-hmm. you might know that I cannot stand dry skin. Like, I literally... Like, I have to stop myself from saying that. Like, if I notice ashiness on my kids, like, I have to be sure that I'm not saying that. That can't be the first thing I say to them. It's like, oh, hey, I'm so happy to see you, me hugging kids. And then eventually I can get to, your kneecaps are looking a little dusty. Your lips are, like, I can't survive. And so she's
it's like, just, did your father put you in a pit of flour while I was gone?
What happened? Did you, I don't know what happened, but yeah, so she describes her.
Oh, and see, and now you made her put some lip gloss on. Now Sylvia's
your
like,
lips
let me just
are properly moisturized. Yeah, I would have look, already. You look.
I'm
you
addicted
text.
To Carmex. So.
Oh, that's.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you look hydrated.
Yeah, but that was one thing that stood out to me because she looked like Martin Short. Apparently, she had thin hair like the Crypt Keeper.
I appreciated
and
the
she had dry skin, and so I was
physical
like, wow,
description as well.
Wow. So that painted a picture for me. So
for
that
sure.
understand that wasn't even supposed to be funny, but it made me laugh.
Because I actually put in my notes too. It was sort of an allusion, a little bit to Harry Potter. Like that sort of situation, because it's a hero journey. Like Madison's our hero, and we see her going from this situation where
she's in the broom closet.
Yeah, basically living under the stairs.
Yeah,
she was in the closet, like she was in the attic, but like in limiting her access to food mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Like that's right. that is an abuse tactic. It's a very
right. It's effective.
Yeah, and it's an effective
just,
one as well.
The stressful household. I really wanted to stress her. Like I really wanted to put the stress on her because. There's so many triggers where we're like, okay, we allow people to put us in places. And then they start like cutting us off more and cutting us off more until we're just in this corner, you know, and they've painted us in this corner. And you either have a choice of just sitting in the corner and, you know, letting them keep doing it, or you like, well, F it. Let me just get out of this corner and I got to fight. You know, if I got to fight to get out of it, I am. And most times we do. We have to fight to get out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, I will say that I feel like I could picture everything that was happening. It was very, and I like too that because it was in Detroit, I feel like when you have those urban settings, it was kind of nice that it wasn't like a pimps and hoes type thing. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that was.
Oh yeah. I love that our protagonist was a scientist.
Yeah. Like we come
like
through
that
science.
She was going to school for biology.
Black excellence.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
I had to learn how to do that. I had to actually learn how, because I wanted their discussions in the laboratory to be, you know,
like
authentic.
Accurate. Yeah.
So I had to constantly learn about splicing DNA structures, how many are in there, you know, what can you do with plants, how you can actually make them grow in different environments. So I had to actually learn that.
Yeah.
And I like that theme too of like for a lot of underserved communities, it is a lack of quality nutrition is the root of a lot of problems.
I did. I like that too.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
The fact that our protagonist,
that would be so awesome.
She was trying to tackle that problem was...
Right.
The fact that she wasn't just trying to solve her problem. She was trying to solve, like, problems at large.
Because I do see, and like you said, there are so many urban books, especially Everybody Bad Come From Detroit.
You already know.
Everybody's a pimp and hoe in Detroit. You know, even when I go outside of Detroit and, you know, I say, hey, I'm an author and I'm an IT support specialist. And they're like, oh, no, you aren't. You're from Detroit. What?
Wow. Like that puts you in a box instantly, right? Like
you
that means
something.
Expected
a pimp and hoe to come up in here.
Straight up, though, I get that too. People don't believe I'm from Detroit because I enunciate my consonants and vowels. I guess
right,
I don't know
because I made sure you did.
Right. Listen, okay. Listen, she got me reading early. Yes. We talked about it, but yeah, it's definitely like it's just refreshing in that way. And again, like this isn't a genre that I. Consume a lot of, though, but like, you know, when you're going through the titles and stuff like that, or you're just reading a synopsis of the book, it's like brothers Jamal and Cash and it's like, I mean, in that, listen, I'm not shitting on that story because that's a story, like, you know, that's a story and mm-hmm. that's a, and there's some truth and some power in that story as well, but I guess it was just refreshing so that it was in a urban setting, but it wasn't that traditional kind of like, okay.
Right.
Yeah, and so it made it nice.
I didn't want it to be. I wanted, and in most of my books, I think only one book I have a pimp.
Okay, one just book. One out of 40. That's not bad. We're giving you, because they're, I mean, they are out 50 here.
50 now since 50? That book.
Let's go. Wow.
So yeah, I only have one pimp. In all of my books. So it's just, I want to reflect the realism because, you know, we have a life here and there are, you know, people with PhDs, you know, 100%. Even struggling PhDs, mm-hmm. you know, you just get yourself in different situations. I think in Detroit, it's either going to make you or break you. I think this is the only city I've ever been in. If you don't find a way for yourself to get out, whether you're living in the city or not living in the city, it will take over you. Oh, Detroit is a hard city to live in.
Yeah, man.
And it's so easy to give in to being those guys at the party store all day or hanging out and doing absolutely nothing or getting, you know, breakfast support systems.
Right.
Getting your children clothes, you know, baby 100%. daddy, or sponsors, you know, having several sponsors. That's what the girls like to call
them.
Yes. And it's so easy to get into those traps. And Detroit makes it so easy for you to just, okay, I'm just going to live off the system until I die.
That is, and so that is a real problem, right? Like, I do feel like, you know, again, sometimes like any books, so we end up reading a lot of like autobiographies, biographies, stories about mm-hmm. people that we either are interested in or we're interested in their stories. And the one thing that I feel like comes up a lot, you know, when you're talking about people from like a background that's less than ideal, is there's always that little beacon of light, right? There's always that person in there or the people along the way who put those little like lights, you know, that little illumination in the middle of the dark. So whether
it's dark,
and I feel like, you know, it's always there, but you have to be receptive to it. You know what I mean? And that arguably, some
people
don't.
It's so easy for us to stay in the dark, though. You know, when they say ignorance is bliss, it is. You can stay in the dark. I've seen people in the dark for so long, even if you showed them the light, they'd be like, oh, I want that.
Because
I don't know nothing about that.
Well, it's because knowledge is a burden. Like, ignorance is bliss because knowledge is a burden.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you know, because you have to do better. When you know better, you do better.
Right.
And it's like, I want to do better. Give me some dark.
Because doing better means you have to do.
That's
the part.
It's more work. It's more work.
It's way more work.
But it's more rewarding. Like, everything that's more work, it's more rewarding.
Absolutely. And so, yeah. All right. Let's go back to the plots. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, these guys, y'all. So,
we haven't introduced Jason.
Let's do this. Do it. I need you to do this. So she meets this guy. They're having this.
I want Kat to introduce.
Me too.
Jason,
do it.
So
really?
She got that far.
Do it. I like
it. Yeah, because I read the whole thing.
Oh wow.
So
wow.
I'm gonna say that again.
Wow, that was real shady. I'm gonna let it slide, friend.
No. But seriously, I did. And so the synopsis, once again, spoilers, but the synopsis of the book is Madison, our main character, she meets a stranger by the bus. His name is Jamar, and he has a play brother named Jason. And basically, because one of the themes of the book, too, is sex positivity, like just about her life change when she was honest about what she wanted in every aspect of her life, including sexually. And she took on both brothers as lovers. And they were both into it. So,
bam, 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 bam.
So there's this one of the, I would say, like, a huge theme is sort of sex positivity and polyamory, like, sort of, because here's the other thing, knowledge is a burden, but so is freedom. So when you have freedom, once you gain autonomy and freedom, you have to decide for yourself, well, what do I want? Mm-hmm. And being honest with yourself about what you want can be very scary because it's kind of like, oh no, like, it turns out I want a lot.
But the way.
You know, that could be a very real thing where it's like, you know what? I want more than what I've been told I deserve or that I'm told that I can have. Like, I want more than that. And Madison definitely did that. Nikki ends up stealing her research and she thinks that Jason and Jamar are in on it. So she cuts them out of her life for a couple years, come back. they're at a conference. She ends up finding out that Jason and Jamar actually weren't in on it. Jason actually gave, or Jamar gave Jason a kidney. So, like, had a baby with Nikki and stuff like that. So, Jason and Nikki are married at this point. Yada, yada, yada. We get to a point where we find out. We find out. No, we got to move it around because it's messed up.
Go.
And so then Jason and Nikki's child, Jarrett, I can't remember his name now because he comes in later. But basically, their baby, he ends up being like super smart and stuff. And he's at this conference where he wins a contest and Madison ends up meeting him and stuff like that. Come to find out, Jason is not really the daddy. He kind of knew that all along. He was just kind of emotionally manipulated by Nikki. Nikki's also been emotionally manipulating Madison's kind of right-hand man, Joshua. A lot of J names. Mm-hmm. You like alliteration. I see that. And so Joshua turns out he's kind of been
dealing doubly. Or something.
Well, no, he was the intern at the lab, okay. But he ends up being Madison's assistant when she starts her new company. The skincare stuff. Because another thing was too, and I related to this a lot too, because like she had a skin condition, like she had really, really bad acne, and like I remember that too, because that was the thing. Like I'm sidetracked because I know I'm supposed to be doing the synopsis, okay, but I've been wanting to hit this because I know that feeling of how powerful it feels when you felt ugly for so long and then you feel beautiful. Because like growing up, I had a skin condition where like I basically, it kind of looked like vitiligo, but it wasn't. And so people were always asking me if I've been in a fire. I never wanted to wear shorts or show my arms or anything like that. Like it was really hard. And then finally you're just like, what? I'm like, this is just who I am. Like whatever. Like this is how I'm serving it. And eventually, like there's nothing you can do. Like at the end of the day, it's like, this is just how I look. And it's either for you or it's not. I don't like that, whatever. But when you find people who find you beautiful, that is really powerful, and you look, you know, that's a wonderful feeling. But anyway, so the little boy kind of find out he's not Jason's son. He's actually Madison's father's son. So Madison, this is Madison's half-brother with her best friend or whatever.
Ew, because I knew they were busting it down. Yeah, I didn't get to the end, but I'm like, it was pretty daddy. Like,
foreshadowing. That was like some pretty, foreshadowing. I put that in my predictions, like Nikki is smashing the dad.
Which is disgusting, by the way, Nikki. You're gross.
Well, you already planned it. He was a sex addict. Yeah. So like he pretty much, and for people, especially men like that, they only see women as sex objects. Like he's not going to like really want to talk to you. No. Like he was busting it down. And Nikki also, you can tell she's the type of person who liked having one over on somebody. So she's like, yeah, I fucked your dad. And so,
That's a medal.
Good.
That's a medal I never want to have for the record. Like, I fucked your dad. It's like, oh man, I feel that.
But like for men, it's like when they like, whatever.
That's so not you on your bedpost.
Because this is the other thing, too, because I love a happy ending. It ended up working out because Nikki ends up, they end up paying her off some kind of way. She goes off, divorces Jason. She's able to have her, like, polyamory relationship with Jason and Jamar. And plus, she also had, like, kids. Surprise, surprise, Madison had kids.
Okay.
Like, there is, Jamar? With Jamar and Jason. Like
both
there is,
of them?
Yes. So,
damn.
Generally, like, naturally, it usually doesn't happen, but, like, if you implant embryos, like, you can have more than one, like, paternal donor.
Okay.
And so, like, basically, that's what they said happened.
Damn, we got back to the science. Okay.
So, like, they are genetically both of their their kids. Like, as I think, was it triplets or twins? I can't remember now.
It was triplets.
So it was two boys and a girl. Yes. And so they basically, and her cousin too, because I don't want to leave her out, Mercy. Madison's cousin, Mercy.
Because like, she has a book coming out too.
Mercy does?
Okay, cool. Because I liked that.
Because of her condition. It's going to be centered around her condition.
Okay. So yeah, I liked it because it had a happy ending. Like basically, we cut all the toxic people out, and we left the
Monica's like, what is the condition?
This is the fake ass book club, y'all. I didn't even read it. So
one of the things is like about built family, because there's the family you were biologically born into, but then there's also chosen family, which a lot of times is who you really need to build with, because you will share values. Like there's no guarantee you're going to share values with your biological family.
Right.
But
and what Madison was experiencing, especially the love of two men, and being able to say, okay, I'm confident in my relationships with them and don't care what the world think. You got to have, you know, a different type of relationship or a family, you know, outside of your own in order to accept something like that, especially her kids. Like, they have to understand the dynamics of all of that. So,
oh my goodness. Yes.
You know me, like, I'm a big Horrible Decisions fan. So they always have a lot of different polyamorous couples on there and stuff like that, and how they work the dynamics of those relationships. Because to me, it seems like really, because to me, like, being single is like an alternative lifestyle almost. Like, people are just like,
people treat you like you're a leper.
Yeah, and it's like, so when are you going to couple up, you weirdo? Right. And it's like, well, you know, I'm kind of cool.
I'm kind of digging this.
Yeah. Like, and, for, and then for people who choose to have more than one partner, it's they kind of run up against the same discrimination a little bit, where it's like, you either have too many or not enough partners for a lot of people, and nobody else gets to decide that for you.
And not for nothing, I think that polyamory, like, kind of lends itself, like, that seems more difficult than monogamy in a lot of ways. Because to me, like, you know, I don't have enough energy to actually, like, if I was to think about truly giving my all, like, I had to, I mean, like, it takes a lot to, you know, truly be in touch with one person's needs and wants and feelings. And
I had to actually interview, like, I think I interviewed maybe about, it was about 9 or 10, a little bit more than that, polyamorous couples, you know. And I, you know, I was asked, because I was like asking her, like, I had like do one-on-one with her and then all together with all of them. And I'm like, well, don't you get exhausted?
Right. Aren't you tired, like, sis?
Don't you get tired? Like, and one lady was like, it's not like, you know, they just snatching her up, you know, she's walking down the hallway.
Right.
And they just snatching her in her bedroom. She said, usually they come, like, one of them in one situation, they come to her room. So they're on schedule. And then she has days to herself. So,
but I'm not even talking physically, though. I'm thinking just emotionally being plugged in.
Yeah, right? And that's what I was like. I was like, well, you have to be on point all the time. But I think it goes back to that, you know, you love them and then you also like them.
Okay.
And she gets the pleasure of having two friends that genuinely want to see her happy. Like, they literally want to see her happy. And when one can't do it, the other one can, you know? So that's how she described it. She's like, you know, it's not even exhausting. It's actually kind of, you know, she's honored to be in this situation.
Right.
She was honored to be in the situation with them. I would be asleep all the time.
Dude, I'm just saying, man. Like,
it's emotionally, tired. If it would feel emotionally draining, but I mean,
right? Like, I think
people are different.
People are definitely different. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I realized that as I, you know, I was exploring this. And I think this is my fourth polyamorous book.
Okay.
So, because it was so many stories that came up, like, while I was interviewing these couples, I was like, oh, I can do it this way. Oh, I can do it this way. And I was like, I know I'm not going to hit this just one time. So this was like my fourth one that I was trying to write. And I'm glad that people, I'm waiting for somebody to be like, oh, Sylvia, you nasty. Like, nobody will ever do that.
But you don't know
what people will do.
Listen, I listen to too many sex podcasts. This was tame.
Listen, shout out to Weezy and Mandy B of Horrible Decisions. I have listened to that podcast and been, like, had to push pause because I'm like,
people are wild, but
I am vanilla.
It goes to show, like, there's not one narrow path for everybody. Like, you have to, and like I said, like, it takes work to figure out what you want, what you enjoy, and being brave enough to find that. Like, I would say, like, Madison, I feel like a lot of the themes were bravery, because she had to break out of a lot of stuff to honor her true self and what she really wanted.
Yeah.
And that's... That's always
it's
to be
beautiful
admired.
When that happens. Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, it's
because who's she hurting? Like, that's the thing, too. It's like, I think that was from Gabrielle Union's book. It's like, I'm not policing anyone's vagina but my own.
Listen, because, like, I ain't got time.
Yeah. Like, that's none about
enjoy
business.
Yourself, sis.
Right,
it's yours.
For real.
Right.
To me, exhausting. Girl. But, like, my life to somebody else looks like really sad and boring.
Or boring. Exactly. It's like, wow. So the same guy,
you just
sitting
around reading comic books. It's like, I love it, though.
Yep.
But the wonderful part about being in love and being in a relationship with that person that you really love is that it's yours, it's mm-hmm. your love. And however you desire between the two of you to express it, that's what makes it a beautiful thing between the two of you. And I think a lot of times in our life, we let other people try to tell us what our relationship should look like.
Ooh, facts.
And and that's what brings us down. That's what breaks us apart, is because we let, you know, other people tell us how we should love. Mm-hmm. And only you can love the way you want to be loved and be loved the way and to give and receive love is how you do it. Don't let nobody else tell you how to do it. And I think that's what a really important lesson, you know, in our own lives. I think, you know, when we start, then we start breaking down into like, you know, what is our love language?
Sure, you know.
And a lot of people don't even know.
Never even thought about it.
But not only do you have to know how you love, but how you receive love. Mm-hmm. Because you can say, hey, I like to be serviced, but I like people to service me in order to show your love. But then I like to give gifts to show my love. Mm-hmm. So we always forget that second part. And then we let the world tell us how we should do that. And that's the one thing you should never, ever let somebody do, is tell you how to love somebody. Mm-hmm. Ever, ever, ever.
Yeah, I like that. I think that is powerful, powerful thing. So friend, let me ask you, what, I mean, overall, if you had to rate this book.
Oh, okay.
Well, how would you rate it? If you had to give it old, you know, old score here, what would you say?
I didn't put a rating down.
You didn't. Okay,
I'm mad. Right, because I finished everything, but I didn't feel that out. You know what? Because while you were just talking, though, mm-hmm. it made me think of a term, which is radical self-acceptance, mm-hmm. because I felt like that's what this came down to. I would probably give this 5 expensive seeds.
Oh, shit.
Here we go.
Not 5 expensive seeds, though. Let's go horticulture. If you read the book,
you'll get it. Yeah, like, it'll land if you get it.
Yeah, but read the book for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, and you know what? I wanted to double back to this, too, because I saw on your website that you described yourself, like your writing style, as a mix of, like, Zane, Walter Mosley, and a dash of John Grisham. Why did you choose that that particular threesome?
I didn't know the middle one.
I know. I had to look him up.
Okay.
Walter Mosley.
Walter Mosley?
Yeah. No, and he looks like he's got some good books.
You saw Devil in a Blue Dress, right?
That was him?
I never saw that.
Oh, okay. I'm ignorant. No, I'm not. Maybe I've seen it. I don't remember.
I mean, that was like a Denzel movie.
I like his writing style because it has this kind of thick air of just drama. Like, okay. He really brings in not only his character, the character has so many flaws, and it affects their decision as the book progresses. And a lot of people mm-hmm. don't realize that, like, if we don't accept our flaws about ourselves, then every decision we make, we could be losing out on our blessings because we haven't accepted that about us. And I like how Walter Mosley brings those out in his characters. And none of his characters are perfect. And I think I can say the same thing about myself. None of my characters are perfect because I'm coming from real life. I'm not perfect. I know that.
That's what makes a good story, though. Yeah. It's not relatable when the perfect, you know, when you have
this. I answered that with our last book. Our protagonist wasn't perfect.
Yeah. It makes things more interesting and more relatable.
Yeah.
I mean, would think she would be because she was so intelligent. Like, she was highly intelligent.
But not life smart, though. I could tell from the, I was like, oh, Lord, Madison.
Well,
like, get it together,
have
girl.
To choose. What the hell? Like, it's so hard to have both. Like,
it is.
Yeah, like, because both take a lot of work.
True that.
Yeah. And she was so into her work that she missed out on life moments that she could have had. Mm-hmm. You know, with the tragedy of her mother being shuffled from house to house and mm-hmm. the relationship, you know, the weird relationship she had with her father, she was so focused on that she missed out on those moments. It could have been a guy there earlier who was like, hey, I like you. And she's so focused on her work. She's so focused on, I'm just trying to make the world better. And that's all I want to concentrate on right now.
Right.
So she could have missed those life moments. So it made her, she didn't have that, what they call it, EQ. She had IQ, but she didn't have that mm-hmm. EQ. And I think a lot of us, we vary between it and in degrees of it in That's our true. Life. I've never seen anybody who had like a perfect
an equal EQ amount of and, both. No,
right. An equal not. Amount of both. And that's what we have to accept about ourselves. If we have character flaws in our personality side, then we should say, hey, I do mouth farts. I will drop a bomb while I'm right. Hey,
not mouth farts.
But if I'm not intelligent enough and you try to get in a room with other intelligent people, you just sound stupid, you know, right. And you don't let people know. Well, I really don't know anything about that. They'll pick up.
That is my favorite. I love to let people know exactly where I am and where I am not. Okay. So that is full disclosure up front. Look here, that's not my ministry.
Right. And but so a lot of people are not like that. You know that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. They want to be part of the front fest and feel like they have to put on that.
I love that front. I love that phrase.
It's a front fest because now, you know, you feel like you have to. Oh, I got to get in these rooms. I feel like I have to do this thing. And then you're wearing this mask. And it's keeping you away from your beautiful. It's keeping you away right. from self-actualization, which is where we should all be. And so, you know, I'm glad to hear that things got resolved. I'm really glad that we're like the perfect complimentary people here. Let's talk about this.
I'll pick it up and you lob it out.
Yeah, man. I like that, you know, this is honestly... to me, why our podcast is good because, you know, we complement each other, you know, on where I fall short, she is strong and vice versa. So, I'm glad that she got through it. It wasn't that I didn't like it. It wasn't for lack of trying, but it is a fake ass book club. But it all came full circle.
I like that you did it came something all full circle. for your marriage.
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm trying to find that balance out here. I'm trying to do it all, guys. It's and it's like I'm failing daily, but I'm also still getting a lot out of everything. And so... I just, you know, I think that's probably a good place to kind of wrap things up. I did want to,
Well, I do want to know if Kat had any more questions for me.
Yeah, Kat, let's go through whatever we've got left here.
How long did it take you to write Beautiful?
Oh, it took me about 3 months to write this one.
Okay.
It literally poured out of me. And that was kind of weird because it was moving so fast. I hand wrote the original book because that's how fast I couldn't type fast enough.
It's funny because I do all my notes handwritten. Like a lot of times when stuff's going fast, I have to write it down by hand too. Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's not just me.
And it's all in shorthand. So
it looks like chicken scratch.
It came out like this thick on paper. And then I got it, I printed, because I did it on a digital tablet. So I had to have it printed off and then retype the book because it was just, literally the book was playing in my head 24/7. Like,
that's beautiful,
I could hear Jamar and Jason and Madison just talking 24/7. Like, it was crazy.
That is wild. Oh, I got one. So if you could picture this as like a movie, like what actors do you see playing these parts? Because for me, I'm very visual. So, like, are there, like, do you picture them? Like, who do you think you would cast? If somebody was like, yes, we're making this movie.
I think that Madison, because I think I don't know if she's old enough yet. I would say that she's more like a Zendaya. Madison would be more like a Zendaya because she had the frilly hair that was really hard to manage, the frilly, curly hair. It would be hard to do Jamar and Jason.
Who, girl? Put them out there.
Well, you said, Jamar looked like, who was the dude with the light eyes from Barbershop? Michael Ealy.
Who said that?
Yeah.
In the book. She described him as looking like Michael Ealy, but without the green eyes.
Oh, okay. All right. And then what about the other one?
Jason.
Who would be the other one?
And so Jason was his adopted kind of
He was like
half.
Thicker.
Yeah, he was
He's
thicker.
Beefy.
He was a thicker built. Yeah. So Jamar was kind of lean.
Winston
Jason. Duke. So it was like, so it's like having two different boyfriends. It wasn't like the same person. So it was kind of like having, you know, your cake and eating it too.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I would be boyfriend girlfriend Winston Duke and Michael Ealy.
All right. That's what's up. I was just trying to get a nice visual for like, okay, if we made this into the live action, which would be definitely like, it would not be just R-rated. Let's talk about it. This would be you go into the adult section.
If you did the whole book, it would be NC-17.
We could put it on Netflix.
Well, maybe. I guess they can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They be doing all kinds of
stuff. Yeah, it would be okay.
Because
yeah,
it was
true.
Very sex positive.
Definitely. So for the girls who love, you know, like if you like those kinds of stories where, I mean, because we have a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of sexual content in there. But also, you know, you have a lot of themes like what we touched on too. So it's a little of something for everybody. So I think it is overall very well rounded. And so.
It's weird because
I put a lot of kinky romantic novel.
Kinky romantic novel. Boom.
Yeah. It's a lot of men come to me and say they really enjoyed this book. Like they're like, I would never pick up a romance until they're like, oh my God, but I read that book because it was in, you know, their wife or their girlfriend had left it, like either in the bathroom or somewhere they were at, and they were like, I picked it up and I couldn't put it down. So that's kind of weird. Like they love that suspense and that thick drama that everybody was going through.
That is awesome. So I do think we're getting to the end. And so I do want to give you, I want to thank you again for your time.
Yes, you're being so generous with your time.
This was fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
I had so much fun. Like, this was so cool. I wanted to give you a chance to shout yourself out and like to, you know, let us know where we can find your works. You know, what are you, you know, all of the stuff, all of the things.
Oh, good Lord. It's a lot.
Yes. Do them. Girl, get them on there. And we'll put them in the notes too, guys. But, you know, the notable thing.
You can always find me on my website at sylviahubbard.com. And I'm on the internet as Sylvia Hubbard 1 all over. On Facebook, you can just find me as Sylvia Hubbard. I have a group and I have a page there. Currently now I have a book. An ongoing story called She Works Hard for the Money, and I'm doing that on Amazon Kindle Vella, so they get to read it live as I write. Like, literally, the readers read it as I write. So we're actually ending that this week. And then in October, I'll be coming out with a book called The Trouble with Gabrielle, and it's about a girl who is pregnant, alone, and about to be murdered.
Damn. Shit. She's got a lot on her plate.
And then in November, I'll be finishing my Essence Divinity series. And it's basically about a man who was in a coma for 5 years and wakes up to find out he has a 4-year-old son.
What?
Oof.
Jesus, these people have real problems. Oof. See, I feel grateful already.
Yes.
No, that's awesome. I can't even say. I mean, I just really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much for sharing your time, your art.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it so, so much. And I hope you enjoyed having your time with us on the Fake Ass Book Club, because we surely enjoyed having you. Felt like some girl time. All right, guys. Well, look, Sylvia, thank you so, so much for joining us. We appreciate you 100%.
Yes, thank you.
And continue on, you know, doing the things, being an entrepreneur and our creator and all of that. So thank you again. And guys, we will talk to you soon.
Before we go, we must give thanks to our sound engineer, Eric Gizzy,
from Dorian Keith Media,
to Urban Nerd for providing our music. Buzz Viral Marketing runs our social media.
And legal services were handled by Trezanne M. Atkins.
If you like what you heard,
please feel free to join us every Wednesday for another Fake Ass Book Club.
Cheers. Thank you guys for listening. You can check us out at thefabpodcast.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you're listening right now. We want to hear from you. Come put it in our life. Thanks again. And until next time, peace, love, and the Fake Ass Book Club. We out.